Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, online fitness coach, nutritionist, and 3 times best-selling author here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest is with the Vagina Whisperer, Dr. Sarah Reardon. In today's podcast, we talk through everything: rethinking postpartum care, sex after having babies, the importance of pelvic floor fitness, and everything that you would need to know when it comes to exercise, and even just the way you approach your body and your physical care during pregnancy, but particularly postpartum. This is one of these episodes that is heavily female focused. So unless you're like me and you are really interested in the body in general, how it responds, or you work in the health and fitness industry and want to educate yourself to support your clients, this is going to be a very predominantly female based podcast, just based on the topic that we cover. Some of the things we talk about, again, amongst lots of things that we discuss, the main reasons for painful sex, best practices for exercising during pregnancy, social media and unrealistic expectations for post-pregnancy, how to look and work on your pelvic floor fitness, the importance of rethinking postpartum care, and everything in between. So without further ado, here is today's super enjoyable conversation with one of my favorite Instagram pages when it comes to all things postpartum care, in particular, Dr. Sarah Reardon, the Vagina Whisperer, on rethinking postpartum care, sex after having babies, and the importance of pelvic floor fitness. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Dr. Sarah Reardon, aka the Vagina Whisperer on Instagram. Sarah is a board certified pelvic floor physical therapist who specializes in online pelvic floor fitness programs. Her goal is to save the world one vagina at a time by providing expert care for your down there. I took this line directly from her website, but I loved it so much, so I'll repeat it on here in the introduction. Our healthcare system is currently doing a terrible disservice to people with vaginas. Postpartum care, for instance, is little more than a 6-week permission slip to return to exercise and sex. And if we happen to have any concerns, they're brushed off. Welcome to motherhood, or that's normal at your age, we're told, and that is not okay. So since 2006, Sarah has worked with thousands of women suffering from pelvic floor problems and decided something had to change and feels that we shouldn't be normalizing pelvic floor problems. We ought to be normalizing pelvic floor conversations. And so the Vagina Whisperer was born. She created the space so that every vagina owner out there can finally get the care they deserve. I'm looking forward to diving into all things pelvic floor fitness, postpartum care, and everything in between. Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian.
I was saying right before we went on air, I came across you first through your TEDx talk and then started following your Instagram page, and you're putting out incredible content, and we will get through some of it as we go through the podcast. But before we do, talk to us about what led you down your current path, because you're normalizing conversations that weren't previously being had, and an area that is 100%, from my experience as a male, underserved when it comes to kind of general Western medicine and the healthcare system, etc. So tell us, what led you down your current path?
Absolutely. So I am a pelvic floor physical therapist. I have a doctorate degree in physical therapy, and 15 years ago graduated from PT school and thought that I was going to be a sports trainer for the New Orleans Saints here in the US. And, you know, during my graduate education, I started getting really interested in what was then called women's health. And I had a professor who just started educating us on, you know, bladder health and pregnancy and postpartum. And I thought, this is really fascinating to understand my own body better. And then when I started to work with patients in this field, I thought, oh my goodness, there are so many people who need help with this, but don't even know where to get help. And so it was such a rewarding experience that after graduating 15 years ago, I jumped right into pelvic floor physical therapy. I treat all genders. I definitely specialize more now in pregnancy, postpartum, and overall general pelvic health care for women.
Talk to us then about the TEDx talk. There's a line and two lines in there that I loved. And you speak that all the preparation for childbirth, but very little preparation for after childbirth. And we are educated on how to care for our babies, but not for how to care for our bodies. Talk to us about rethinking postpartum care.
Yeah, that's great. And even you reading those back to me kind of gives me chills. I haven't listened to that talk in so long. You know, I was practicing for 10 years in pelvic floor physical therapy and then had my own babies 5 and 7 years ago. And going through that experience, I was thinking, gosh, I've got so much education in this field. I feel so fortunate to have this background, but everybody should have access to this information. I felt like, why was I the lucky one to just pick this field, but all of the other pregnant moms out there also need to know this? And so I started my Instagram account, The Vagina Whisperer, and it was really just for my group of girlfriends, all having babies around the same time. And then the growth of the account has just been so organic, word of mouth. And I think that that's really a testament to how much people really want this information. So in 2019, I had this amazing opportunity to present a TEDx talk, which I definitely feel like was one of the highlights of my career. And it was just an opportunity to share with a larger audience that, you know, moms are struggling, that our current healthcare system just, you know, it's this beautiful time during pregnancy. We're kind of praised and honored. And then after giving birth, there is little to no guidance in this field. And again, I was a pelvic PT for 10 years and I still felt so lost after giving birth. Like, I had no idea what was normal. Is this okay? Who do I contact? And then in my own clinic, working with women all day, feeling the same way, I was like, something needs to change.
One of the things you talk about on your Instagram page, and again, there's lots of different content on there from pelvic floor fitness and some of the freebies that I give out, that you give out, which I think are brilliant. There's one that's six tips to prevent and overcome pelvic floor problems, which I think is so valuable for people. But with postpartum in particular, from your experience, and I'm very curious as a male, and my daughter's 7, so I remember when her mother gave birth, there's this wave of confusion after, for 6, 8, 12 weeks, where you just don't know, can you have sex? Can you exercise? Can you do X, Y, or Z? There's nothing. Why do you think, and I'm just very curious as a male on the opposite side, why is there so little given to new mums when it comes to postpartum pregnancy in particular?
Gosh, Brian, I wish I had the answer because we desperately need it. You know, I think that our healthcare system, and I can only speak for the United States, just isn't really set up to help moms transition in that really tender postpartum time. I mean, you know, getting up and getting out of the house when you have a newborn baby and you're completely sleep deprived is kind of an act of God in those first 4 to 6 weeks. I know in other countries they have, you know, healthcare professionals or nurses go to your homes, and we just don't have that kind of healthcare system here in the US. So there's no check-ins until you go to that 6 week postpartum visit. And the research shows that, you know, 40% of moms don't go to that 6 week postpartum check-in. They either feel like it's not valuable, they are back to work, they don't have childcare, it's hard. So, you know, I think that what social media has done, and even being on a podcast with yourself and all of these avenues to just spread more awareness and share that, like, hey, moms are struggling. This doesn't have to be a silent experience anymore. We have an outlet to connect, to communicate, and just really start saying we need better care. So, you know, I don't know why it isn't that way, but I see the change happening. The needle is moving very slowly, but it's definitely not happening fast enough.
Yeah, I think it's a very important conversation. As I said to you before we went on air, it's a topic I've been looking to cover for ages on the podcast because we have a large female audience, very large download numbers in terms of presence and awareness for people. And it's such an underserved area. And I think that's why your content connects so heavily with people. And for those who aren't following you, I highly recommend doing so off the back of this podcast, if anything we say connects with you. But you did a reel recently about, you know, sex after baby. So some of the reasons why you might not feel like having sex after having a baby, and something that'll come on my space. People generally don't ask me about the sex side for obvious reasons, but exercise. They'll say, when can I exercise? When can I work out? When can I train? What are some of the reasons why people wouldn't want to have sex after having babies? And the reason I bring this up, because there was a lot of engagement on that post, is sometimes there can be a bit of nearly a self-worth issue, or females will turn it inwards and go, well, what's wrong with me? And that's a completely, in my view anyway, the wrong way to look at it, because there's physiological things going on with your body. So much is happening. Think about what's happened and what you've done over the last 9 months and the last few weeks. So talk to us about sex after having a baby and some of the reasons why people might not want to have it.
Well, there's a lot of reasons. And the first one I put on that Instagram post is you're tired, which is number one and number five. You know, so I think that to even take a step back, when we go to our 6-week checkups, you know, with our medical providers, the two things that were really addressed are, yep, you can go back to sex, and do you want to get on birth control? And so that narrative is already created thinking, oh, the role of you is a sexual being and to have babies. And there's not a whole lot of other conversation about anything else that we may be experiencing. But pregnancy and birth and postpartum is such a transformative time for a woman's body, emotionally, physically. And after we have babies, I mean, our body just does not go back to the way it was pre-pregnancy or pre-birth. Our muscles have lengthened and relaxed. We may have scar tissue from a perineal tear or a cesarean birth. You know, there can be pain in the area. Our sex drives are decreased. Our estrogen levels are, you know, lower, which minimizes your sex drive. We may be lactating and breast milk is coming out, you know. So there's just so many changes. And I just feel like one of the things is we need to take the pressure off of moms. If we feel like we get that thumbs up at 6 weeks, we feel like that's something we have to go back to do when you don't. I mean, I'll be very transparent. I waited 12 weeks after my second kid. And that was fine. It was fine with my partner. It was fine with me. It was like the last thing on my mind when I had two babies under two. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think we need to give ourselves a little bit of time, a little bit of grace, and change the expectation that we have of moms going back to sex. The other thing is our muscles and our tissues have changed. And again, there's no explanation of, hey, this is normal. Like, there may be some discomfort. There may be some dryness. Use a water-soluble lubricant. You know, check in with a pelvic floor therapist to see if there's any scar tissue or tense muscles, things like that. So I think there needs to be a few more steps before we tell a mom, okay, go back to working out, go back to having sex. We're expecting them to go back to their pre-pregnancy functions, but yet their body has completely transformed.
Do you find that there's a wide spectrum when it comes to the timeline for new moms from that 6 weeks to 12 weeks? Is it a wide spectrum, or is there kind of a general range in which they fall in, or some way longer? I know there's always going to be outliers, but from your experience, Sarah, and from even your personal experience, but again, having worked with so many people, is that quite a wide spectrum in terms of exercise, sex, post-childbirth?
Totally. So with regards to sex, I think, you know, I've seen a handful of moms that at 4 weeks they're going back, and I'm like, get it, girl. If you feel good, that's okay. But if at 6 weeks, 8 weeks, if you don't, like, it's okay to give yourself more time to heal or to feel ready. I actually find that some of the people who wait a little bit longer to get out of that, the kind of the thick, foggy initial postpartum recovery phase, do better in the long run. And that's the same thing with exercise. There was some research that came out a few years ago that really recommended that moms, postpartum moms, wait 12 weeks to go back to high intensity fitness exercise, which means running, jumping, CrossFit, you know, anything where they may be bouncing or jumping, because those muscles need time to heal and you need time to re-strengthen them. Again, you know, I always say this, that our pelvic floor muscles are like a hammock that sit at the bottom of our pelvis, and pregnancy stretches and lengthens those muscles over a 10-month period. They don't just kind of spring back together afterwards. So you really want to spend, you know, that 6 to 12 week time period strengthening your muscles, easing back into exercise before you just jump back into your pre-pregnancy fitness routine.
And what would a kind of basic exercise program look like then? Would it be a primary focus on pelvic floor fitness, or would it be a combination of several things?
It's totally a combination. And I tell people this all the time, like, you can do Kegels till the cows come home, but that doesn't necessarily mean your pelvic floor is going to show up for you when you need it to. So I teach people the basics of a pelvic floor contraction, which is also known as a Kegel. And that feels like, you know, if you're urinating and you want to stop your urine stream, that's a Kegel contraction. I don't want you to do it while you're peeing, but that's what it feels like. Or if you have to pass gas in an elevator and you're trying to hold it in, that's a Kegel. But what we want to think about is integrating that contraction into day-to-day. So I start people with simple things in lying down, like, you know, a leg march, bridges, pelvic tilts, and then I increase them into doing some sitting exercise and then move them into squats, lunges, like really functional things that we're doing throughout the day. We're picking up strollers, we're lifting babies, we're squatting to pick up toys. So bring that contraction into those functional things, and then you'll be able to bring them into your fitness routines as well.
Is there, when it comes to exercise in particular, is there any major misconceptions? I know ones I mentioned in the introduction from your website, that's normal for your age, or welcome to motherhood, or kind of general postpartum misconceptions, and just, you know, kind of get on with it mindset that is the reason for this conversation, so we can expand that conversation to where it needs to be. But with exercise, is there any particular misconception that people have postpartum?
I do. I think that some of it is, it's changing, but I would say one of the things is that we should be able to do what we did pre-pregnancy. I mean, people always be, you know, always kind of tell me, but I used to be able to run 5 miles and I was fine. Or I used to be able to deadlift this much and, you know, without my back hurting. Or I used to be able to do double unders without leaking. Well, your body has changed. It has gone through a major transformation. So we can't expect it to perform in the same way unless we train it to show up in that way. It's kind of like, I can't go run a marathon if I can't even run a mile. So we have to train our bodies to be able to kind of reintegrate into that same fitness routine, which takes time, it takes persistence, it takes, you know, really finessing these contractions. The other thing is that I think that we've kind of normalized leaking with exercise. I mean, I see a ton of videos of weightlifters and CrossFitters and, you know, not to call out any specific exercise, but, you know, typically higher intensity activities where people are peeing their pants. And it's kind of become, I don't know, like a source of pride or ego or, and I think, oh my gosh, when that person is 40, 50, 60, 70, they're going to be in diapers or Depends or getting surgery. And I just feel like if we can really teach people to scale back their exercise, re-strengthen their pelvic floor, and then start working up again to meet those fitness goals, their pelvic floor is going to show up for them a lot longer than if we just normalize peeing their pants. And, you know, I just think that nothing against males, Brian. I have a husband and 2 boys. I'm a fan of males, but I think sometimes if there were men experiencing some of the things that we were as, you know, as parents, I think it would be a different conversation. You know, I was watching a commercial all about erectile dysfunction the other day, and I'm like, if we could like normalize pelvic floor physical therapy or exercise for women after birth the same way we did erectile dysfunction, I feel like we would be in a better place for postpartum care.
I completely agree, and hence the conversation, because it, one of the reasons that I think it's powerful, these kind of conversations, is you have your content that's going out there. And I think when you bring a slight male perspective, it opens up that conversation. I think because I'm quite kind of alpha fitness guy, used to be a bodybuilder, now do endurance events, very rah-rah. And having these conversations allows other men to open up that dialogue with their partner or with their sister or whoever it is that might need their support and help. So I think it hopefully, again, that's my goal. I might be completely wrong, but hopefully it opens up that dialogue between people. With the leaking...
Yeah. Really quickly, I think you're right. I mean, you have a daughter, and so you're going to be able to educate your daughter on, hey, you know, when you go through certain seasons of life, if these things show up, there's help for that. Or, you know, this is normal, this is not. I have 2 sons. And so vagina is a common word in our home. You know? So it's like, I think we really can change not even just the community that we're in, but the next generation of people about pelvic health. And again, normalizing this part of our body, it's just like if somebody had a shoulder injury or back pain, it's just another part of the body. And I feel like we can really start just elevating that conversation and have it be normal to talk about.
Why do you think it hasn't been normalized yet? You mentioned erectile dysfunction in males, and that's something that very few people bat an eyelid at now. It's like, okay, this is a legit problem. But as you said, when it comes to pelvic floor work or anything along those lines, there's a bit of a taboo, for the lack of a better term. And why do you think it's normalized with men and not so much with women? Is it just that the conversation isn't being had, or do you think it's something else?
I think it's twofold. I mean, I think that the narrative has been, you know, given to women that as you get older, you're going to pee your pants, sex might hurt, your body changes, deal with it, right? And so I think we're trying to change that narrative. And I'm going, I don't want to end up in diapers as I'm older or end up in a nursing home because I am wetting my pants. Like, that is not what I want my destiny to be. So I think we're trying to change that narrative. And also, I mean, a lot of this is backed by research and backed by pharmaceutical companies. And, you know, a lot of males are running research, so they're not even aware of what a woman would experience postpartum. A lot of males are at the head of their field in medicine, and that's changing as more women come up. But I think that there hasn't been an awareness of what the needs really are of women. And I think that that's also changing as we see more female-founded health companies that are saying, you know, nope, moms need better, we can do better. And so again, I think it will take time, but the healthcare of women has not ever been really the priority. The second piece is that these are super intimate conversations. Like, if I was having painful sex and it was causing kind of intimacy issues with my partner, I don't know if I would share that. But it's been really amazing as a pelvic floor physical therapist to have women come into our clinics and just share these intimate details and feel relieved that they can talk to somebody, and they go, I've never told anybody this. And I'm going, well, this is the third time I've heard this today. So we deal with patients all the time with this and are able to help. And so I think really creating a safe space for people to feel like, oh, there is help for this, I do know where to go, is again just going to change the path that we can take women for recovery.
I love that. And you mentioned a very interesting point there about the research. And as I'm a certified nutritionist, so I work a lot with people in fitness and the nutrition. But when it comes to things like intermittent fasting, something that comes up time and time again when people ask me about it, primarily that research is done in men. And normally in healthy individuals or overweight individuals, it's not done in females. So when females bring, well, I'm going to do intermittent fasting, I saw this research, or they'll link me a research, I'll go, well, that's done with men. I was like, you know, women are not small men. I was like, there's different things going on there. So it's important to be aware of that if you're listening to this, because I assume 95% of this podcast would probably be women, and probably a handful of guys listening as well, just similar to me, who are interested in the topic and supporting the people around them. You mentioned painful sex there as well, Sarah, and I know you've covered this too, and I'm just out of curiosity from my side as well, very similar to sex after babies and after a childbirth. What would be some of the main contributing factors to painful sex, and does pelvic floor fitness play a role in that, or is it from a whole other potential? I know it's a Pandora's box of a question here, so I apologize in advance, but
no, what it's would great be some let's of the open it that,
yeah, all right, let's open that box.
Let's open the box. I mean, I think that these are the things that people want to know about. These are the real deal things that people are dealing with in their homes, in their bedrooms. So with respect to painful sex, if we're talking specifically postpartum, but this can be really any season of a woman's life, there's a handful of things that come up, and it's muscle tension. So your pelvic floor muscles are like any other muscles in your body. They can get tight and tense, and they don't relax well. So I always compare this, that I get tension in my neck and shoulders and I get really bad headaches. It's the same thing for your pelvic floor. If your muscles aren't relaxing well, it may be you may experience pain with initial insertion, deeper insertion, or certain positions. Another factor for pain is vaginal dryness. So people sometimes feel like, oh, is something wrong with me? I don't feel like I can get as lubricated as I do, or, you know, I don't want my partner to think I'm not attracted to them. But really, it's hormonal. After giving birth, or if you're entering menopause, or you're on birth control that has hormones, your estrogen levels are lower, and therefore you don't have as much natural vaginal lubrication. And so that can cause dryness, tearing, sensitivity in the area. So I always recommend using a water-soluble or silicone lubricant. And there's nothing wrong with you for that. I mean, that's something that can help decrease friction and increase pleasure. Another one is scar tissue. And it's interesting because a lot of people think, oh, I don't want my vagina to get jacked up, I'm just going to have a cesarean birth. And everybody has their reasons for having the method of birth that they feel most comfortable with. But you can actually experience painful intercourse whether you've had a vaginal birth or a cesarean birth. Because a cesarean birth, you have a major abdominal surgery, and the fascia of the abdomen is so closely connected to the pelvic floor that that scar can be tight, it can be restricted or sensitive, and that can cause discomfort at the pelvic floor muscles as well. So those are three of the main reasons I think that people experience pain. Muscle tension, scar tissue, dryness are probably some of the more common reasons.
That's, I think, so helpful for people, and something that, again, I might be focus group of one with my partner, but obviously something I've discussed on the podcast in the past is menstrual cycles and how the time of the month affects that. So in knowing how estrogen goes up and down and how it certain periods, it might impact, you know, lubrication and vaginal dryness, etc. So I think education is key, and there's nothing necessarily wrong with you, assuming that it's not causing any major life issues. If you think you have a medical issue, of course, go and see a professional. But if it's one of these, what I call kind of day-to-day issues, what that's more of an annoyance, do the education, read the books, listen to the podcast, check out the blog post. I'll link up a lot of your stuff, Sarah. You've loads of stuff on the blog and on Instagram on this, and I think education is key. One of the things I wanted to ask you, because when I was doing research for the podcast, more so when I was going through the website, and I took out that line about the healthcare system doing a terrible disservice at the minute, what is a question that you think either people or the medical profession or healthcare system aren't asking enough that they should be?
You know, I think that it's two things. I think the first one is, what does better look like? You know, I think we have to have a mission, a vision, and as to how, what do we want that to look like for women and moms? Is it that they have time at home for recovery? Is it that they have lower risks of postpartum depression or anxiety? Is it that they have lower incontinence rates, which is urinary leakage, or less pain? And then I think we're able to kind of step backwards and say, okay, how do we get there? Because if we don't know really what we're aiming for, and I think all of those things are part of it, then we can't make, it's either it's policy changes and it's healthcare changes. I mean, how is a mom supposed to recover at home if, you know, a lot of, one in four moms is going back to work within 2 weeks of giving birth? We just don't have the support in a lot of countries to allow moms to really heal. So I think that that's one thing. I think the second thing is, I would love for people to ask, like, how do we get there? How do we get this information into the hands of moms? And I think that that's why it's been really incredible to see so many pelvic floor physical therapists, not just myself, there are so many amazing PTs out there that are, we're going directly to women. We're going directly to patients and saying, there's a better way. Here are some exercises. Here are some tips for lubrication. Here are some tips for postpartum recovery. And it's free, because we really feel like there's a better way. And if the healthcare systems aren't going to make pelvic floor therapy part of pregnancy, make pelvic floor therapy postpartum checkups part of the standard of care, then we're like, well, we're going to tell people that they should do it themselves and go directly to them. But I really think integrating it into our healthcare system is key. One other thing I always say is, I'm like, I go to the dentist every 6 months to get my teeth checked up. Like, why am I not getting a pelvic floor checkup for my vagina? You know, it's a pretty important part of the body. And I feel like I want to know, is it tense? Is it weak? Are there exercises I need to do? Like, what's my care for, my plan of care for just keeping it healthy like we do other parts of our body?
That's so true. I've used the analogy with fitness that we bring our car for a service every 6 months or every year, but we don't get our blood work done to see how our overall health is. And it's the exact equivalent of that in terms of, you know, priorities. What do you value more, and then looking after. But I get there's a normalizing the conversation helps that for sure, because people are less, I think embarrassed is probably a word that describes it, although I don't think it's just, I think it's a very normal bodily thing. Everything we discuss, everything you discuss, but normalizing it definitely helps people just get over that kind of hurdle in their mind. When it comes to the pelvic floor, there's lots of myths out there. You actually have a freebie on your website. I'm going to link it to people about the five myths about pregnancy and your pelvic floor. But talk to us about one or two of the biggest myths people have about pelvic floor in particular.
So I think, you know, one we kind of already touched on, that vaginal birth versus cesarean birth, that a cesarean birth spares your vagina, which, you know, unfortunately, if there was a way to spare it, I would say I totally get people wanting to pick that avenue. But your pelvic floor muscles change over the course of pregnancy itself. So regardless of what method you give birth, you have pelvic floor changes that mean you need rehab after giving birth. Just like if you had a major surgery or you had an injury, you would rehabilitate your body. You'd go to a pelvic floor, you'd go to a physical therapist and kind of, you know, do sessions and exercises to, you know, improve the way that you're moving and functioning. So any type of pregnancy, cesarean or vaginal, you experience changes to your pelvic floor. The other one is that you do have to modify your workouts. I think that, you know, this is especially important for your, you know, the population of your listeners. You can't keep doing the same thing and when your body is going through a change. Your hormones are changing, so your ligaments in your pelvis are loosening and softening to accommodate a growing baby. So deep lunges or unilateral stuff may not be the best thing because you don't have that same stability. Pain is not normal. If you experience pain with something, that's information for our bodies that, hey, something is a little bit off. This is not a push through it kind of situation. This is, I need to listen to that and make some changes so that I'm not experiencing those symptoms. And again, our body changes. Like, we're carrying a heavier load in front. That's going to affect how far we can run, how much we can lift. You know, I really think that there's this little bit of ego, and I'm, you know, susceptible to it as well. It's like, I want to keep doing the same things I've always done. I want to take care of my body. But sometimes taking care of your body means scaling back, not continuing to push forward.
I remember back when I used to do one-to-one PT, I do all my programs online now. I had one of my girls who was pregnant, and she was about 8.5 months pregnant, and she was adamant that we were going doing a CrossFit workout that she had done at 4 months. I was like, you are not, I was like, firstly, you're considerably heavier, you're a different shape now, we are not going doing that CrossFit workout. She's like, I can do it. I was like, well, I'm sure you probably can, but let's not. Just as soon as you said that, I remember that conversation from years ago. When it comes to exercise during pregnancy, then what are some of the best practices people can take? As you said, listening to the pain being a cue, I think is a big one, because your body will give you feedback, especially in those changes. I think it, again, I might be wrong, you can probably speak to this a lot better, Sarah, it probably gets easier the more children you have. I'd imagine there's a lot of confusion, and it might be different with every child, of course, and every pregnancy, but especially in the beginning, because as you said, you think you can do all the things you could do before you got pregnant, or some will have that mindset. But what are some of the best practices that people can apply with their exercise? As you said, listening to the pain cue, is there anything else? And assuming from your area of expertise, and again, I've worked a little bit in this area, but this is your baby, pardon the pun, in terms of specialty, what would be some of the things people should consider when it comes to exercise during their pregnancy in the lead up to, you know, say the 9 month period?
You know, when I think of this, the first thing is learning to engage your transverse abdominal and pelvic floor muscles. So your pelvic floor muscles and your deep abdominal muscles, which we call your transverse abdominal muscles, work together. And, you know, people say oftentimes, like, you know, pull in your belly button or flatten your tummy, or those deep abdominal muscles and your pelvic floor are going to get stretched and lengthened during pregnancy. So you, they're not going to turn on as well as they used to prior to a growing belly. So I would say learning to engage those muscles is key, because you really should be doing that before every exercise you do, before you squat, before you deadlift, before you do an overhead press or whatever it is people do. You've got to turn those muscles on to keep them engaged. The second thing is exhaling with exertion. If you're not breathing when you are exerting effort, that could be pushing something, pulling something, lifting something, contracting something, this kind of canister of our abdomen and pelvis is closed. It's a closed system. So when you load it, there's a lot of increase in pressure there. And if that pressure doesn't have a place to go, it's going to go out towards your tummy, which can lead to diastasis recti, which is a separation of your abs, or it can go down to your pelvic floor, which can lead to weakness and pelvic organ prolapse. So exhaling kind of opens that canister and relieves some of the pressure. So contract your pelvic floor and transverse abdominals. Exhale with exertion, learn those two things. And then the third one is monitor for symptoms. If you see coning in your abdomen, which is diastasis recti, if you feel pressure in your pelvic floor or you experience urinary leakage, that's information for your body that the load is too high, the reps are too many, the intensity is too much, and so pull it back a little bit.
Do you find, and again, this is definitely where there's a gap in my knowledge, because I'm kind of going off hearsay and experience working with clients, does exercise during the pregnancy help with the actual childbirth, or is that in, are we going into myth territory there?
No, it does actually. So people who exercise regularly during pregnancy have better births, and that's birth satisfaction. We're not just going off of, you know, I think what people are reporting is their births may be slightly faster, their baby may have higher APGAR scores. But where it really comes into play is also postpartum recovery. They tend to recover better postpartum. But I think we have to think about, you know, what kind of exercise are they doing. I am a physical therapist. I'm a huge fan of movement. If somebody's like, what's the number one thing I need to do? I'm like, walk, move. None of us are doing it enough. I mean, motion is lotion for our body. So, and we're just live in a very sedentary world. So exercise is awesome, but and people always say, like, what exercises should I do? And my response is, it depends. And it's about how you do it. Are you engaging your abdominals and pelvic floor? Are you exhaling? Are you able to maintain proper form and not experience leakage or diastasis? So it's about how you do an activity versus like what's good and what's bad.
What's something, Sarah, you wish you knew? Because you mentioned your children, they're your boys, 7 and 5, I think you said, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
What's something you wish you knew back then before you had your first son that you know now?
You know, I can't say that it's related to pelvic floor health. I would say it's just related to motherhood in general. I think it's hard. And I think that what we see on social media, and some of this is changing, it's starting to look a little bit more authentic, but I just had this vision that it was going to be pretty. You know, babies are cute, but beyond that, like the postpartum recovery period is not. That you'll be bleeding for several weeks, regardless of what method of birth, that breastfeeding is hard. It is really, really hard. And that was a huge challenge for me. My pelvic floor did great. I had unmedicated births. I had no tearing. I had amazing birth experiences, but my breastfeeding was the biggest challenge that I had. And so I think that I just wish that I knew how much support I was going to need by lining up a contact for a lactation consultant or a mental health therapist. And just knowing that it's going to be hard. So put in some of the support structures kind of beforehand in case I needed them. And then the second thing is, you know, we've talked so much about kind of the negative changes or the changes that we experience, but there is this crew, this tribe that you join as a mother. And you don't quite get it in the same way when you're a dad, but there is just this allegiance and this understanding that you have with somebody else who is also a mom. I mean, I remember flying and my babies were screaming and I was by myself and my husband wasn't there. And this amazing mother just came and dropped like a pack of fruit snacks on my kid's lap and was like, here you go, buddy. And I was like, angel, you know? And I've got a mom who's, she's literally taken my baby off my hands on a plane and just like held him and bounced him because I was sweating and stressed out. And you know, I think that moms just understand like it is hard. And once you're on the other side of it, there's just this community that's all rallying around you being like, you can do this. We've done it. We're here for you. And it brings me chills just thinking about it, but I just feel so, so lucky to be part of that tribe now.
Oh, that's so incredible to hear. And I'm just want to let that sit for people that when you become a mom, you join that tribe nearly automatically. And there are people out there that have been through what you've been through. And I think just to sit with that because of some of the, as you mentioned, it can feel like it's all negative, your body changing, the leaking, all of the stuff. You're like, oh my God, what's going to happen? But there is this wonderful element. And again, coming from you, Sarah, a wonderful element that people are joining that tribe, that they're joining off the back of it. But I do want to pull it back just because I think I heard you speak about this on a previous podcast. I think it was, you know, Not Your Mother's podcast or one of those podcasts about, and I might be misquoting from some other piece of content you created, so apologies if I am, but how social media sets that unrealistic expectation that when you had your first son, you thought it was going to be, you know, X, Y, and Z, and actually it was 1, 2, 3, something completely different, not even letters, it was in the numbers. Talk to us about your experience in particular, and again, feel free to expand about how social media can potentially set those unrealistic expectations, because I think similar to physical fitness, before and after photos, transformations, people never see the work that went on underneath. It's just the before, after, the none of the what effectively fueled the journey. And I think pregnancy can be a little bit like that, as you said, particularly childbirth on the back end. Talk to us about social media and unrealistic expectations, particularly from your experience.
Yeah, so I mean, I think, you know, back 5 years ago, it was a lot of filtered photos and, you know, people dressing up their kids in these cute outfits and they matched their parents and they snuggled in bed. And I was like, oh, that's going to be amazing, you know. And I remember my husband took some time off work when I was, you know, also early postpartum. He's like, this is going to be great. I'm going to play guitar and write a couple songs. I mean, we were drowning. So I'm like, and then you start to question yourself. I mean, we were not sleeping. We were fighting, you know, we were like, what is happening to our life? We didn't know that this is going to be this way. Does everybody experience it this way? You know, what we share is what we want people to see. And that's fair. That's reasonable. We don't show the outtakes of all the stuff that goes on in our lives. We show the picture that looks the best, where we look the best and the kids are smiling, their, you know, shirts are tucked in and all that stuff. So I think we just want to always kind of take everything that we see with a grain of salt, that it's what we share is what we want people to see. And I think that that's the same thing with pelvic floor health. You may see people like hitting PR goals or like having these awesome abs or whatever. You don't see the work. You don't see the struggles. You don't see the problems that they have. And that's okay. But I think we have to understand that it's just one sliver in time. I think that I have started seeing people showing up a little bit more authentically to share about motherhood. And I think that that's why people like the Vagina Whisperer Instagram account so much. And this is just the feedback that I've gotten. But they're like, you share all this stuff that nobody talks about. And I'm going, well, I talk about it all day. I mean, I see, you know, 8 to 10 patients and we'll talk about how to poop after giving birth and like, why does sex hurt? And, you know, what's coming out of my vagina and like all of these things. So to me, it is part of daily life. And it is part of kind of showing up authentically that it feels scary and I'm not there to scare people, but I'm there to empower people and inform them. And I hope that it does that by showing them a little bit more about what really happens at, you know, not just even physically, but like in every way when you give birth and go through postpartum.
With your social media channel, with the Vagina Whisperer in particular, is there any area of content or specific topic that tends to connect the most with people? You mentioned there pooping, postpartum, the sex. Is there any area that tends to connect the most? And again, as it's such an underserved area, and there's definitely an availability bias because you talk about it all day, but there's very few speaking about it in terms of the realness and the reality. And I think that's why there's so much value in the page and in the Instagram page. But what's the content that you post that tends to connect the most with people, or pieces or any area? Again, I know it's another Pandora's box of a question, but if you had to handpick one particular area, what would you say?
I would say it's postpartum recovery. I think that early stage of, you know, you come home with a baby and you're like, what do I do now? Like, you're responsible for this tiny human and you're responsible for feeding them and keeping them alive. But then also, how do you feed yourself? How do you take care of yourself? How do you take care of your other children? How do you, you know, continue to feed your relationship with your partner, with yourself? So with your friends. I mean, I think that there's just so many variables and it feels so overwhelming. And, you know, I remember going through it like, holy moly, how did every other mom go through this? And like, is this what they did? And it is. And I think that when we start talking about it, there's just so much camaraderie of like, oh my gosh, it was so hard. But these are the things that helped me, my friends, this breastfeeding resource. I remember, you know, I had a friend, I was figuring out breastfeeding and my friend down the street drove over her nipple shield for me, you know, and I'm like, I love you. Thank you. And so I think that, you know, there's just such a connection because we go through it and nobody else knows what that is like, and except for the mom who has gone through it and is trying to navigate those early newborn days. And, you know, there's this amazing quote out there that's always like, you know, the day that you give birth, it's not just the baby who's born, it's also you, the mother. And it's beautiful, but it's also true because you're just on this, there's no going back. There's this whole new journey that you're on. And even if it's not the early postpartum stage, it's just motherhood in general is hard. Again, I think we see all these like super fun things that we do and I share it with my kids as well, but there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that's not as pretty and it's kind of exhausting. I think when we share those glimpses of reality, people really resonate and connect with that.
And I think it's understanding that there's both. There's the reality of this is hard, this is difficult at times, but it's also amazing and wonderful at times. And just don't be led into one or the other, because obviously it's going to potentially affect decision making or even your outlook and the way that you perceive it and see it. So I'm so glad and grateful for it. I just have one final question, Sarah, and I've loved this conversation. As I said, big fan of the Instagram page, and I'm sure it's probably predominantly women following your page, but as a personal trainer, as a certified nutritionist, as someone that works with people, I highly recommend other trainers checking it out as well, just to educate yourself, even for your own potential personal relationships, romantic relationships, and your partner, your wife, your girlfriend, even other relations, the sisters, cousins, people who are around you. But the final question I have, and you've got a huge Instagram presence as is, I think there's several hundred thousand on the page already. The TEDx talk that went up a few years ago has, I think, 40,000 views. It's one of those that the lovely comments written underneath, I saw them, some of the people saying, look, I'm so glad you're talking about this. But I'm curious, Sarah, if you had access to everybody on Instagram with a vagina, to keep it on trend for today's podcast, and you could put up one post that would hit everybody on Instagram who has a vagina, what would you say?
You know, my favorite post that I've ever done to this day is of me in my vulva costume showering, and it's how to wash your vulva. And it's to a Cardi B song, WAP. And it literally was like, in my head, I was just like, this would be so funny. And I just did it. And it took me 3 seconds. And I kind of like hopped into the shower with my, you know, vulva costume and a shower cap and my tripod. And my husband's like, what are you doing in there? I was like, ah, don't worry about it. And then I posted it and it went viral. And it's hysterical to me. And these are just, you know, Instagram's been so fun because it's like these little thoughts that I have in my mind. I'm like, oh, that would be really funny. And then I post it and sometimes it sticks and sometimes it doesn't. But if I could share one with everybody, it would be the vulva in the shower and how to wash your vulva.
Amazing. And what an incredible way to finish and round off the podcast with vulva in the shower. Sarah, I can't thank you enough for all that you do, for your time, for everybody that's listening that wants to check out you. I will link up everything we talked about in the podcast, the freebies, the 6 tips to prevent and overcome pelvic floor problems, 5 myths about pregnancy and your pelvic floor. I'll link up the website, obviously the Instagram page, the vagina.whisperer. But is there any links or anywhere else you'd like to send people, or is that the best place for people to connect and reach out to you?
No, the best is that, I mean, we have so much on our website, thevaginawhisperer.com, like blogs, everything. I mean, it's all, you know, a ton of free content. And then we on there, we have our online fitness platform as well for pregnancy and postpartum pelvic floor health. So yeah, it's all on the website. That's probably a great place to start. And then Instagram, if you're just, you know, looking for something entertaining in your feed.
Amazing. And for everybody listening, I will link everything we discussed in today's podcast on the show notes on briankeenfitness.com and in the description wherever you're listening to your podcast on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts. You can click straight on through, go follow the Instagram page, go check out the website, check out the freebies, check out the programs. Sarah, keep doing what you're doing. Absolutely love your work. Thank you so much again.
Thank you, Brian.
There you have it, Dr. Sarah Reardon, the Vagina Whisperer on rethinking postpartum care, sex after having babies, and the importance of pelvic floor fitness. Really enjoyed this conversation. If you did, be sure to hit that subscribe or that follow button if this is your first time listening to the podcast, or if you know somebody who this podcast would connect with, please share it with them, send it over to them on social media, or text it to them or WhatsApp it to them. I think this is one of these episodes that if it connects and is applicable, there's so much value in here. So if you did, please share it or hit that follow and subscribe button for episodes coming every single Monday. That's all from me for this week. Catch you all next Monday.